I wasn't good enough.
My greatest fulfilment in life, when I rode at Kempton, in the same race as Lester Piggott. Proudest day of my life.
Did you let it go?
I let it go.
What will you do if you don't make it as a jockey?
I don't know. If I know I couldn't be one, I'll get out of the game. Won't bother.
And what do you think you would do then?
Run on taxis.
So that's Tony. He's a cab driver. This is a documentary series that they've done in the BBC. I think it's from the BBC for years. And what they did was, I think it was back in 64, they followed 14 kids around for a little bit. They were all 7 years old. Different backgrounds, different places from around London. They followed them around as 7-year-olds. And then they've come back every 7 years and done another documentary. So they did 7 Up was the first one, 14, 21, 28, 35, 42, 49. And just premiered recently on POV here on our local stations was 56 Up. And joining us on the phone right now is one of the stars of that show, Tony, and he is the cab driver. Tony, how are you this morning?
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, America. It's a pleasure to talk to you and be here.
Well, it's great to have you on the phone. I just watched this documentary earlier today, and it's, you know, you're on the cover of the DVD, but they got you all the way at the end of the show. Why are you buried all the way at the end of the show?
Well, the situation was, as you appreciate, we had the Olympic Stadium, and the last shot was Michael Apted had me running around in 76, making that 21 up. Consequently, they knocked all that site down, the dog track and all around there, of a 2-3 mile radius. Then they built the Olympic Stadium, which took about 3 years to build. Consequently, the dog track then become now the... Olympic Stadium, and he felt it was a good shot to have go back to 1976 with me running the dog track and seeing how the dog track has changed into the Olympic Stadium.
Yeah.
So the cameraman was on an helicopter, and we fulfilled that shot, and that's how he wanted to leave the film.
That was pretty cool, and it was neat because what I love about the series, Tony, is I've never seen any of the other ones. I'd never even heard of this documentary series, and I know it's pretty famous over there in England, but
yeah.
The way that they did this one was that they show lots of clips of the other various years of you as a kid, of you as a 14-year-old, of you as 21. 21 is when you were running around the dog track. And were you running numbers there? They showed some video of you running around taking money from people. What were you doing back then at the dog track?
Education. I mean, I had an education at the dog track. I learned all the prices and everything and the fractions, you know, sort of 21 to 20, 11 to 10, even money and all this. And by the time I was sort of 20, after my jockey career evaporated, I was sort of like a very educated about how to get money and on the floor, you know, running around, taking prices, getting a better price. And it was an education. And I got a living through that by the time it helped me get through to the knowledge of becoming a London cabbie.
So the documentary series is fascinating, and it's done by Michael Apted, who is, you know, we know here in America is a pretty famous director, Gorky Park, and a couple of other films. Of course, I don't have my notes with me. Coal Miner's Daughter. I mean, Coal Miner's Daughter is a very famous film here, very revered film.
Well, it keeps following me around. Two things happened to me only last week. One, I picked up Sigourney Weaver
nice.
In the back of my taxi. And Michael Apted directed her in Gorillas in the
Mist. Yeah.
So she's never met me. So I said to Sigourney Weaver, me and you have got something in common, but you don't know it. So she asked me what that was. And once I said I was one of the kids, her face and jaw dropped. And we were talking in the back of my cab going to Claridge's. Then she emphasized that she's here in Pinewood Studios making a film with Christian Bale. So I said to her, well, when you see Christian Bale tomorrow, give him my love, because when Spielberg directed Empire of the Sun, I was Christian Bale stand-in for 3 weeks.
Get out of here.
So it seems that I upstaged her twice. Now, only 2 days ago, I'm driving my taxi in London, and John Brisby, the very posh boy who's a QC, Queen's Counsel now, I was parked up having a cup of tea, and he came out the courtroom with all his wig and all his gowns on and all his entourage, and I just called him, John, hello, my friend. And he came over, and we had a shoot the breeze for 5 minutes, and we had a quick chat, and we had a photo took, which I've got a photo now, got prosperity in my phone, so I cannot believe it. It seems this people follow me around coincidentally, but it's fantastic.
Well, and so you seem to be, Tony, so I don't know how many, because I had to fast forward through some of it because I was running out of time watching it today. I'm trying to get to Tony. I'm trying to find Tony, but I'm watching a bunch of the different stories. They're all fascinating. And a lot of the people that Michael has followed over this immense period of time, almost 50 years now, have a love-hate relationship with it. But you seem to have a, you know what, this is pretty cool. This has been good for me. And even though I didn't, you know, fulfill my dream of becoming a jockey and get to do that, I'm pretty happy with life, and I'm pretty happy checking in on everybody every 7 years.
Well, I do embrace the camera. I do embrace the production team as well. Michael, I trust with my life because he's been there now ever since sort of 50 years, which is a great testament to him.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I can only speak for myself. I know other people are less forthright in coming forward and being interviewed, but I love it and I embrace it, and I'm very upbeat because I appreciate the history of, and the documentary of the film history. And as I say, when I am gone from this world, the kids can put the CD in it, press the button, and the grandchildren after them, and they can say, there he is, and I'd like to feel that it's a positive interview that I give and a truthful one.
You know, Tony, a lot of us can remember, you know, as a kid saying, oh, I want to be a ball player, or I want to be something when I grow up. But you have this on record that you really wanted to be a jockey, and that was your dream. And they have you at different stages of your life, and then, you know, being an apprentice at stables, and then, you know, grasping at your dream, getting to do some races. And then you're very forthright in the clip I just played, said, hey, it wasn't good enough. It just wasn't going to work out. You accepted it and moved on. Because you have such a concrete thing to look back at, is it tougher to say, you know, I had a chance, or I did this? Or do you say, you know what, I went for it. I went for my dream. It didn't work out. That's okay. Life is still good. I moved on. Is it, you know, is it tougher on you than the rest of us who don't have to be famous about it?
Yes, I understand exactly that question. I get asked that a lot, seeing a dream broken in neon celluloid. The situation with me, I had an affinity from the day I was in the cradle with a horse. I knew that there was an affinity straight away. And at the time when I went 7 and I rode my first pony, I knew that it was my destiny to try and to become a jockey. And everybody, whoever you are, whether it's in the act of paternity or profession or sport, or, you know, like a Michael Jordan, someone to aspire to him and his heights, you have someone to follow. Now, as a child growing up, I only looked at the racing paper. And in there was a guy called Lester Pigot, who was no less than like Bill Shoemaker over in America, a very top man. And at 17, I found myself in the same race. And my mum and dad were there, and my family. And now I finished stone last, but that isn't the point. The point was I achieved my goal to the highest level at a 17-year-old kid. And I was so proud. And even now, my mum and dad are not here.
Yeah.
I feel very emotional when I know I could look in the mirror with complete and utter clear conscience, knowing that I gave my mum and dad something to go to heaven with. And for me, I'm sorry, but I do get some emotion over
it.
You see a broken dream in front of you. But then again, I knew my destiny then. I knew I wasn't going to reach the heights that I should have done. I gave dedication as much as I could. My weight got the better of me, and I just had to move on.
Well,
but from there,
and being
ability-wise, I thought, you know, I could have given it another 2 years.
Yeah, well, and being a jockey is a tough thing. You have to be small, and there's not much you can truly do about that. It's kind of how you are. Now, you can lose weight as much as you want. If you get too tall, that's kind of how it is. But, but you left the horse industry completely. You didn't become a trainer or a jockey trainer or a, you know, a horse racer. Why did you move?
Yeah, I don't know. Working racing, they call it.
Yeah, well, how come you didn't stay in the sport some way?
Well, one, I couldn't see myself getting up. It wasn't lazy. At 6 o'clock, half past five every morning and mucking out every day. You know, I didn't want to sort of be a T-boy every day. I wanted to be, if I'm not in amongst it, the top, you know, with the guys, I don't want to be part of it. Because, you know, it'd be so envious of me being, you know, in the stables, looking after the horses in preference. I should be on the racetrack rather than there. And it would have been hard for me to stomach that. And I couldn't take it. And, you know, I love being in the limelight, of course I do. But on the other side of it, I wanted to be with the jockeys. And fate never gave me that chance other than a little sprinkle of stardust that shone on me. And that's it. But, so I thought, well, I'm going to move on and try and make my future elsewhere.
Yeah.
And then I come from a family of London cabbies. And my uncles, my brothers, my sisters, everyone drives a cab. My wife now, my son now, everyone drives cabs. And I thought it was the only place I could go. And I turned my career to acting. And I turned my career of trying to become a stable cab driver. So
well,
riding horses, I'm riding cabs.
And you've done a good job of it. I mean, they show in the film that you're still working as a cab driver, but you also have a home in Spain, which looks pretty cool. How, you know, is it the side acting jobs and the fame from this documentary series? How have you been, you know, I think of a cab driver as somebody who really scrapes together a living. How have you been able to do so well for yourself?
Well, my wife's a London taxi driver. We combine our income and we work very hard. And but despite getting old now, I'm sort of 58 today, going into 60, and I'm trying to slow down. But at the end of the day, I've got another grandchild that's come along. That's making me 6 grandchildren. And again, from 14 down to 3 weeks old, the grandchildren, 6, it's still sort of financial, you know, pressure on me to try and help them as well.
Sure.
So other things have got to sort of be sacrificed, i.e. I'm always thinking of selling up in Spain and coming back, because the economy out in Spain is completely flawed. And the situation where we had 20 neighbours, we're sort of down to 12 now. And, you know, I think I might have to make a sacrifice here.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It's one of it's the same all over, I guess, because here in the States, we talk a lot about the sandwich generation. There's a whole group of people around your age and my age that are have their own kids to take care of, but also have their parents to take care of. Your parents are gone now, but you're helping out your kids and your grandkids. And, it, you know, it's not kind of the old days where you worked for 30 years, had your pension, retired and enjoyed your life, right?
Similarity over here, but at the end of the day, I mean, I've got one daughter living at home and my granddaughter living at home, so obviously it's very hard for them to go and get independence and buy and get their own flat or their own apartment, because, you know, once they find out how much they've got to pay per month to pay the rent and everything, it's just beyond them. It's beyond them, you know, straight away, and I've got to help. I've got to help. To make sure the future of my grandchildren is safe.
Yeah. Tony, can you hang on for a couple minutes? We got to take a quick break, but I'd love to chat with you some more. Are you okay?
Absolutely, sir. Anything you like.
All right, hold on. We're going to talk more with Tony from the documentary 56 Up. It premiered just this last week on WTTW here in Chicago and on PBS Nationwide. It's still streaming until November 15th. We can't find any more times that they're going to show it locally here, but if you go to pbs.org/POV, it's a POV film, and you can stream it through the website until November 13th. More with Tony the cab driver. Hey, got a question about England? Here's our guy Tony. He can help us out. 312-981-7200 or text us at 24720. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN.
2 years is a long time to be married. And most of all, I mean, I've got an open characteristic way about me, and sometimes it has got me into trouble, which has been well documented before. I owe Debbie everything.
That's Tony the cab driver. 56 Up is the documentary. You can stream it on pbs.org. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. We've got Tony the cab driver on the phone right now. Tony, you know, I played just a little bit there where, you know, you're one of the one of the few people that I found on the show who've been married for a very long time. You've been married 32, 34 years now, something like that?
34 now, I think.
34 now.
You know, when you're getting old, when you don't realize how many years you've been married.
You know, it's been a long time then. Well, but you've been very on, you know, marriage is a rough road for everybody. And and not all of us have it documented, though, every 7 years. And you've had some ups and downs, and you've been very forthright about that in this documentary series. How tough
well,
is
it? It's a form of therapy as well when you're in Michael Apted. I mean, Michael Apted is a very trusting friend. And when the cameras are on and I'm talking to him eyeball to eyeball, he puts you in a completely different sort of surgery atmosphere. That, you know, I forget the cameras are there, and he starts talking about wherever things are happening, personal things, irrespective of what's going on. And as I say, I just gave a truthful answer of the time that's happening at that particular time.
Yeah.
And, I accept my woes, but at the end of the day, I was honest about it, and it was a form of therapy as well. At the end of the day, I gave what I considered truthful whether some people call it stupid, it's up to you to receive that. But
sure.
It worked for me. I'm you know, I was wrong. I'm very sorry. My wife and I, we repaired the damage and we moved on, and we're still here after all them years. So it's fantastic.
That is fantastic. And I understand it being a form of catharsis and working through this. But at the same time, you're realizing with everything you say, and Debbie's realizing with everything you say, that millions of people and everybody you run into is going to see this and know your business. And was that tough at all for her, for you to realize once you shot that, like, damn it, you know what? Maybe I'm going to regret that later on.
Not really. I mean, truth is truth. When you're under the microscope, I'm thinking to myself afterwards, when you see the, you know, how would you feel if I'm watching someone, you know, these film stars and everything. You look at Michael Douglas now and his dear wife, you know, they've had trouble in the last year. Yeah. And they've sort of got back together. So, you know, that's the only one highlight. I'm just trying to give you sort of like an highlight. And, but
sure.
It happens everywhere. And,
yeah.
And people can aspire to get their marriages back on the line, not just through me, through other people. And it could be a therapy for them as well.
Well,
the end result, if you know, it could be, you know, a more soothing, better relationship.
Have you heard from other people? I imagine you hear from people all the time that watch the show. So have married couples or anybody said to you, you know, I really appreciate you being so honest about that?
Well, not only on that particular subject of the marriage, but I've inspired millions of people around the world. I get emails every day. I get letters nearly three times a week, you know, of about six or eight. They come from Norway, Australia, America. I must say about the American people, they've been so kind to me. In California, when we were promoting the film, Michael and I, 2 months ago, as well as New York in January, when we went and done the theater promotion in New York.
Mm-hmm.
The American people, for me, the most loveliest, warm-hearted people that I've ever experienced being away from home. And I'd just like to say thank you very much for your gracious love, and most of all, coming up to me and showing your warmth and love to me.
Well, we appreciate it.
I cannot stress enough the importance of that.
Well, we appreciate that very much.
I do give emails back and say thank you, and they tell me that I've inspired them. And irrespective, whether it's a job, whether it's a marriage, whether it's, you know, ambition. And I do go to colleges. I do go to classrooms when they do sociology programs. And I'm sort of a torchbearer, and I say, you know, people with, you know, can I do it or can't I do it? And like the Obama, yes, we can. It's like, yes, you can do it. It's positive thinking. And, you know, I'm a boy from the buildings, you know, with me butt hanging out, me trousers, me pants, you see. And I had nothing. Not to say I've got everything now, but at least I've got a steady income and a steady living, and I'm happy, you know.
Well, you've done well, and you've had a good life. You know, it's interesting when we see the clips from the very first one from the 7-Up documentary. You were a tough little rascal. You were getting in fights. You're dirty. You're running around there. You were a bruiser.
Well, I was certainly a bruiser, Matt, and I saw more dinner times than dinners, and it was the greatest education to have a streetwise. I was born on the sort of like right in a rough diamond area.
Yeah.
And you had to survive by, you know, wit. You had to survive by aggression. And, you know, my dad was in and out of the prison, you know, probably Joliet if he went to America. But you can imagine, it was a learning curve. And by the time I was 10, I was a very rough diamond. I was very sort of rounded in a way. I knew how to get a living. I worked in a fruit shop. I worked as a paper boy. I worked as a bookies runner then, you know, and I had an education. It was fantastic. And by the time I got to sort of 1920, I had a great education streetwise. It was fantastic for me.
How do you know the prison Joliet here in the Chicago area? How in the world do you know Joliet prison?
Joliet, I pick up a lot. I used to watch The Sting a lot. You know the film The Sting?
Sure.
And I know every word of that. I can recite you every word, every scene out of that film. And Joliet is the prison, Wabash and LaSalle Street. And, you know, I know it sounds silly, but that's it. And when they get in my cab from America, I always say Joliet. It's a lovely name, Joliet. And they go, hey, you been to the prison?
Hey, Tony, let me ask you one last thing. We got to run to the news here in a second. But when somebody in London who maybe hasn't been here hears Chicago, what is the international thought on Chicago? What comes to mind? What would people say if you said Chicago?
Is Frank Sinatra singing My kind of town, Chicago is, or the Chicago Cubbies, Chicago is, the Winkling Building, Chicago is, that's my fault.
That's your thought.
And I often play it in our cab, and,
excellent.
You know, that's my fault of Chicago, and Joliet, Illinois, and then that's the prison.
And you know what? You know what? You're going to be shocked here, Tony. The prison is closed down.
Oh, is it? Thank God for that.
It is. So you'll never have to visit, you know, in a way that you don't want to. You'll be fine. Don't worry.
Well, all you lovely felons out there who stayed in Joliet prison, I would say God bless you all and wish you all well.
Tony, we so much appreciate you spending time with us. I've got your phone numbers now, so from time to time when there's England news that we want to talk about here on the radio, I'm going to call and harass you, okay?
Well, listen, Matt, thank you very much for your love and your kind words, and I'd just like to say to the American people, thank you. I hope it's well received, that program. It's a testament to people's lives. And I'm just a little drop in the ocean trying to express what life has got to offer, good or bad.
Well,
and it inspired me to be, you know, in that film. If I've done that, I've done a little thing to say thank you.
I think it's been very well received. And quite honestly, we look forward to seeing you at 63, Tony. It's not too far away.
Don't forget my website, please, Matt. Tony Walker, The Up Series. And I'm on Twitter, Taxi Tony 7-Up.
Okay, hold on. Let's get you a good plug here. Tony Walker, theupseries.com. Is that the website?
Yes, sir.
So all spelled out.
I'm on Facebook as well, and I'm also on Twitter.
On Twitter.
Taxi Tony 7-Up.
Taxi Tony 7-Up on Twitter.
Yeah.
The number 7, right? Use the number?
Yeah, no, Taxi Tony, TAXIE, 7-Up. Yes, sir. 7-Up.
And Tony Walker, theupseries.com. Awesome. Tony, we'll talk again. Thanks so much for spending time with us, buddy.
Well, thank you for the time.
You bet. Have a great day. Tony Walker from the current video, the current documentary in the series, 56 Up. Go to pbs.org/POV. They'll stream it till November 13th. Really, Colleen and I were watching it today. It was really cool. So fascinating. You get so caught up in these people's lives, seeing the kids from when they were 7, what their dreams and hopes were, and then going through and they're showing flashbacks at all the different times they checked in with them. Some guy who was homeless for a while, some guy who dropped out of the series because he hated the reaction when he was younger. Now he wants to promote himself a little more, so he came back in. People have gone through marriages, divorces, all these things. It's just a slice of life. They're regular people just like us, but everybody's got a fascinating story.